It's time for Agriculture, presented by Turkana Farms in Germantown, New York, a small-scale producer of heritage breed livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres. They also produce a full array of garden vegetables, many of them heirloom varieties raised naturally, as well as an assortment of berries, including raspberries, blackberries, gooseberries, black, red, and white currants, mulberries, and elderberries. And now, here's Mark Scherzer.
Only once did I see my mother really cry full out. It was Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year in 1960. I was 9 years old. As was our custom, we got dressed up far more than on any other day of the year and traveled from our New Jersey home to Pelham Parkway in the Bronx, then a kind of upper middle class Jewish ghetto, to celebrate. That meant going to services in the morning, and after the shofar, the ceremonial ram's horn, was blown and services had concluded, back to my maternal grandparents' apartment for a big festive meal. Services were held at the shul my grandfather frequented down the block from their apartment. Last month, as I drove Eric back into the city, we took a little detour so I could show him some sights of my childhood, and I pointed to an alley on Wallace Avenue and said, "This was the synagogue where my grandfather went." "This," he said, looking at the alley. His incredulity was understandable. This shul, which literally means school, was not a grand building constructed for worship. It was a first-floor room carved out of the back of a standard Bronx six-story apartment building, with virtually nothing to signal from the street that it was there. You would go to the back of the alley, through a door to a tiny vestibule, and enter a plain, square, windowless room, perhaps 70 by 70 feet, with the ark containing the Torahs along one wall and the seats arranged around it. To the right side as you entered, behind a curtain, was the woman's area, where perhaps 20 women could squeeze in on folding chairs. The rest of the room was the men's domain. Just as the space itself bore little resemblance to what you'd think of as a synagogue, the service did not resemble what you might expect of an organized religion. Yes, the rabbi and cantor would go through the set text for the day in a prescribed sequence, but for most of the time, in between the leader's punctuations, there was a chaotic cacophony of men's voices, each at their own pace and varying volumes, reading aloud the very long passages of text in between, all in Hebrew. This was what I understood davening, praying, to mean. Jewish shucking and jiving, rocking back and forth and occasionally bending at the knee, mumbling the text until bursting into the recognizable song-like cadence of a prayer. The men were packed shoulder to shoulder in suits, and on a typical Rosh Hashanah day with its delightfully warm weather, it would be hellishly hot in there. As a child among the men, I reveled in the overwhelming intensity of the experience. Rosh Hashanah 1960 was warm and sunny, and when we arrived, there was uncharacteristically a very large crowd outside on the sidewalk. Something was amiss. My mother, upon inquiring, was told that someone had had a heart attack during services. Call it intuition, but she got an ashen look on her face and sent my father back down the alley to check out who it was. Perhaps 5 minutes later, he reported back that it was her uncle, Max Warman, my grandfather's brother, and that an ambulance had been called. And while we waited for the ambulance, she sat down on a milk crate on the sidewalk, dressed to the nines, and sobbed uncontrollably. Max was a gregarious bear of a man, loved by all, a cheerleader of conviviality whose most characteristic act, arriving at the lake at our family bungalow colony in the Catskills, was to wade in and splash himself with the cold water, loudly proclaiming, "L'chaim, l'chaim," literally, to life, but really he was saying, "What a pleasure." He said this to everyone around him to urge them into the water. While it was not surprising that my mother would be upset at the illness of such a beloved uncle, I was astonished to see an adult, particularly a pillar of strength like her, cry like a baby. I was of course reminded of Max Rosh Hashanah's death, which so shook my mother, by the news as Rosh Hashanah began this year of the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, which shook so many of us. Numerous friends have circulated the adage from Jewish tradition that a person who dies on Rosh Hashanah is a tzaddik, a person of great righteousness. Reading that adage, I thought first how Uncle Max, who died not only on Rosh Hashanah, but while praying in a shul, must be a kind of super tzaddik. But my thoughts quickly turned from Uncle Max to my mother, and here's why. News of Justice Ginsburg's death brought on a rush of angst in me that will enter a period of even deeper political turmoil than we already have. Is that even imaginable? It made me fear that through cynical power moves, a judge could be railroaded onto the court in the coming weeks, who could tip the balance of an election that may well be decided by litigation. And the result, I fear, could be years more, perhaps many years more, of incompetent, corrupt, strongman rule in place of the return to normalcy that a majority of voters will almost certainly choose. My mother, I knew, was during her life a big fan of Justice Ginsburg. They were of the same generation. My mother, with a BA in biology, gave up her dream of going to medical school because she was told that with Jews facing quotas, she would be taking the place of a man if she did so. She regretted that decision her entire life, and she admired Justice Ginsburg precisely because the judge fought against discrimination of all sorts and overcame it personally herself. Despite her single loss of composure at Uncle Max's death, my mother was also tough. She remembered people's transgressions and was unforgiving. She could smell a hypocrite a mile away, or in Mitch McConnell's case, at 250 miles, and would unhesitatingly call them out. She cared a great deal, not just for her own family, but also for the kids she taught. But it did not make her a softie. She voted. She marched. And these strengths we learned from our mothers are qualities we may all have to call upon in the weeks and months to come. Gear up to fight like hell against those who would reject a court nominee of a Democratic president on the grounds that it was only 9 months before an election, yet would take up the nominee of a Republican less than 2 months before. Why, you may ask, is this relevant to a farm bulletin? Why am I not telling you about the mood of the sheep or the threat of frost? Or what arrangements have come about for next season. And there's actually good news on that front. Stay tuned. Well, why? Because in my view, the concerns of the farm are meaningless if the world the farm operates in falls apart. Some issues transcend and demand our attention. Happy New Year. L'Shana Tova. Venceremos.
Agriculture is underwritten by Turkana Farms, LLC, a small-scale producer of heritage-bred livestock and a wide array of vegetables and berries on just over 39 acres in Germantown, New York. More information, 518-537-3815.